No one can establish his existence experimentally beyond the proof of Shruti or Vedic wisdom. We have to accept this truth because there is no other source of understanding the existence of the soul, although it is a fact by perception. There are many things we have to accept solely on grounds of superior authority. No one can deny the existence of his father based on the authority of his mother. There is no source of understanding the identity of the father except by the authority of the mother. Similarly, there is no source of understanding the soul except by studying the Vedas. Confirmed. There's no source of understanding the soul except by studying the Vedas. How will you understand what the soul is? You can't speculate. And no ordinary human intellect will be able to conceive of it. It's inconceivable. But we have to hear from higher authorities about the soul. What to speak of God? God is the supreme soul. Even to understand the individual soul, we need to hear Vedic knowledge. Therefore, when we speak of knowledge or education, we refer to Vedic knowledge. What is now being presented as knowledge in so-called educational institutions is not considered knowledge. This is simply, if this is not knowledge in the real sense, because real knowledge means to understand the soul, the super soul, the real situation of the world as it really is, not as they think it is. They have a misconception. They don't know how things are going on. It's like if a child opens a little school amongst his playmates and starts explaining to them, you know, his conceptions about how the light works. He thinks, you know, I don't know what he thinks is in there. So he may give some explanation. There's some candles inside there. So that's his conception, but it's not correct. He doesn't understand the complexity of electricity and how it works and how it's connected and how there's a power source and how that power source draws from other energy. It's a whole thing, and it comes from the sun and where the sun comes from. He doesn't know that. So his explanation is not real knowledge. It's just speculation. It's incorrect. Similarly, our childish scientific or so-called philosophical, on every category, we're simply speculating. And it's not real knowledge. It's based on ignorance. Everything that we're teaching, for example, let's take geography. Okay? What do we say in geography? Well, this is America. This is our land. And the first thing they say is wrong. It's not America. That's just a name you've given it. Where was the name America a few years ago? And where will it be in 100 years? So you're giving some illusory speculation, imagination, even in geography. That this is our land. Another mistake. It's not your land. It has nothing to do with you. You're a thief. It's just a bunch of rogues from England. Excuse me. Being so frank. A bunch of rogues came over from England and declared this is our land. Killed some local natives with their whatever weapons they had. And said now it's our land. Well, is it your land? That's not correct. That's not knowledge. So this is what we're teaching is knowledge. You say, okay, but what about something like biology? That's a real science, a life science, and it's accurate knowledge. No. Again, no, because they say that the species are evolving. It's not knowledge. How is it true that the species are evolving? That's complete nonsense. Okay, but what about mathematics? What about a hard science like mathematics? That's knowledge. Well, Prabhupada, of course, does sometimes use mathematics as being something solid or substantial. He says 2 plus 2 equals 4, and you can't change that. So we may say that mathematics has some validity. Of course, it's also there in the Vedas. So the Vedas give knowledge, spiritual knowledge, and they also give material science too, but it's accurate because it has its basis in Vedic knowledge. So we might accept some aspects of mathematics as they present as being knowledge. But of course, because for example, the science of astrology. Astrology is a Vedic science. It's material, because simply learning astrology doesn't bring you to love of Godhead, does it? There are so many, if you turn on the television, you'll see they have a psychic station. Any of you know about that? No? Good. So the psychic station, and they talk a little bit about astrology. Not much. But there's certainly no love of God there. not even the smallest shred of love of God. It's simply love of money, love of sense gratification, and that's all. There's no love of God there. Of course, there's no astrology there either. But even if you take the science of astrology from the Vedas, it's true. You can get some information, but in and of itself, it will hint at your soul, but it doesn't directly give you information like Bhagavad Gita. You'll get some idea because it'll talk about your past lives. So it's based on the Vedic principle. That's why we accept astrology. And that's why Vedically, or traditionally, Brahmanas, they also, in order to maintain themselves, these are generally grihastha brahmanas, they may maintain themselves by offering astrology and medicine, medical help, to people of Ayurvedic. So when they go around, then they go to people's homes and they say, would you like to know what your astrological chart is? And they get some donation. This is how they maintain themselves. So this is acceptable because it has its basis. The astrological chart will tell you about your previous lives, about this life and future lives. So if that information is given, what does it mean? It means, well, I'm not the body. Therefore, it's acceptable. And Ayurveda also, even though it's dealing with just the body, but because it has its foundation in the Vedas, the understanding that the soul is different than the body is also there. And the soul is affected by the different airs and things like that. So therefore, these sciences are more advantageous for society than, for example, like Western science, allopathic method, because it's not taking into account the subtleties of so many things, being in harmony with nature and being in harmony with God, and what to eat and what not to eat. Just like they overeat, and then they have to blast away with so many bombastic medicines, or so-called medicines. Actually, in the material world, the so-called solution is worse than the original problem. We've seen many times. In the Vedic culture, because the whole principle is based on spiritual life, Vedic culture means elevating yourself towards the ultimate goal of going back to Godhead. And therefore, Vedic knowledge has incorporated tapasa, brahmachar, jnana, samenacha, dhamenacha, austerity, beginning with brahmacharya, celibacy. This is taught in the Vedas, not only for Vaishnavas, but others, even in Buddhism, which has some connection with Vedic culture. And even Shankaracharya has some connection with Vedic culture. He also studies the Vedas. He recommends brahmacharya, and Buddha recommends brahmacharya very strongly. Now, where Christianity recommends brahmacharya, that's also good, and that's considered Vedic. We can accept Christianity and Buddhism or Mohammedanism as being Vedic to the extent that they present Vedic knowledge. Prabhupada says that any culture that encourages brahmacharya or celibacy is good. It's very good for society. So we see some Christians groups, they recommend celibacy, at least for the priesthood. And so that's nice. The Vedic culture is more. You see, they not only recommend celibacy for the priesthood, but for everyone, the lay society also. And even if they're grihasthas, nowadays there's a theory that you may have heard this theory, maybe not. new theory for grihasthas, that for those who are second or third class grihasthas, they've invented some terms, that it's okay to have sex life more than, you know, once a month, that Prabhupada recommended. They're proponing. Pardon? Well, no, they are putting forward the theory that they found this in Manusamhita, that for second and third class grihasthas. However, this is not what we receive from our founder Acharya, our spiritual master. He also has studied Manusamhita, and he has quoted many things from Manusamhita, but he didn't quote that. He discusses that grihasthas, the term grihastha refers to one who follows the system, the Vedic system, which means sex life is only for begetting children and only to be performed once in a month after performing garbhadhan samskar. Very strict. He's very clear on this point. Anyway, we'll continue with the purport. In other words, the soul is inconceivable by human experimental knowledge. The soul is consciousness and conscious. That is also the statement of the Vedas, and we have to accept that. So that's an interesting statement. It's consciousness and it's conscious. So the soul himself is conscious, but the soul has consciousness. So consciousness is considered like the sunshine. You cannot say that the shine of the sunshine is not the sun. It is the sun. But it is and it isn't. So certainly consciousness is our subtle body, the presence of the mind, intelligence, and ego. That's how we express it, at least here in the material world. In the spiritual world, the consciousness is expressed in terms of spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, and spiritual ego, real ego. Sometimes the word Atma refers to the soul, to the mind, and to the body. So we also accept that the self includes these three in the full, complete explanation. Because right now we are bound up by a body. And right now we are bound up by a subtle body and a gross body, the soul. Not, the soul is not dependent upon them, and the soul can leave them behind. Or at least it can purify them. Certainly the soul leaves behind the gross body, but the subtle body it may take along, and if it becomes purified of the impure covering, then that subtle body can also be incorporated in the spiritual world. Continuing with the purport. Unlike the bodily changes, there is no change in the soul. As eternally unchangeable, the soul remains atomic in comparison to the infinite Supreme Soul. The Supreme Soul is infinite, and the atomic soul is infinitesimal. Therefore, the infinitesimal soul, being unchangeable, can never become equal to the infinite soul or the Supreme Personality of God. This is important because this Mayavad philosophy that we've all heard, that we can become God, is, you know, they teach that in all the yoga classes and the different meditation societies, isn't it? You know, meditate that you are the one, that you are the Supreme. Even people who take drugs, LSD and other things, they try to think that they are moving the stars and they're the center of the universe. But this is incorrect. We are not, we can never become the Supreme. We are always infinitesimal. We'll never change. It's not that by practicing yoga for 6 months we can become God. It's not possible. If you're not God now, it's too late. You didn't make it, and you won't be able to become God. So you have to ascertain whether you're God now. Because if you're not now, then you won't be able to do it in the future. Is anyone God here? No. This conception, this concept is repeated in the Vedas in different ways just to confirm the stability of the conception of the soul. Repetition of something is necessary in order that we understand the matter thoroughly without error. Any questions? No, but he has a mind, he has a spiritual mind, he has a spiritual ego. What is the spiritual ego? Aham Brahmasmi. Nityaswarup Krishna Das. His spiritual identity is that I am servant of Krishna, and he has a spiritual intelligence. In the material world, in the spiritual realm, we have the aspects of Ladini Shakti is the pleasure, and what else? Sambini and Sambit. Yes. So when they come in contact with the material world, then those aspects of the spiritual, the internal potency, take on a different capacity here. But when purified, we also have intelligence in the spiritual world. Satchit Ananda is there. That's what the soul is made of. So the soul has intelligence as part of its constitutional position, and it has its identity as servant of Krishna. And the mind, the capability of individual choice is also there. Thinking, feeling, and willing are the functions of the mind in the material world. So when they become purified, then one can utilize all those functions in the spiritual realm. The spiritual world is not without thinking or feeling or willing. In fact, that's where the real thinking, feeling, and willing are going on. That's the real ecstatic emotions that we hear about Krishna and his emotions with his friends, the coward boys. Their love is so deep. Their friendship is so deep. They cannot live without each other. If the coward boys don't see Krishna, even for a moment, they're in anxiety. And Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they're always thinking about Krishna. So this is the real... They're always thinking how to please Krishna. Mother Yashoda is always cooking some nice preparations. In that song, here, the song for the noon arti. Do any of the devotees here sometimes go to noon arti? It's called Rajbhog Arti. Any of you go? Okay, so you can sing this song. This is the song that Prabhupada designated. Not only Prabhupada, but also the acharyas have designated this song to be sung for the noon arti. Bhaja bhakata vatsala shigura hari shigura hari so he goes to bihari nanda jashomati chita hari. I'll read the translation. Just worship Sri Gaura Hari, who is always affectionate towards his devotees. He is the same supreme Godhead Krishna who sported in the coward pastures of Braja and stole the hearts of Nanda and Yashoda. Melo holo damodara aisae kano bhogamandire basi karha bhojana. Mother Yashoda calls to Krishna, "My dear Damodar, it is very late. Please come now, sit down in the dining hall and take your lunch."
Nandirani deshe baisi giri baradhari baladeva sahasaka baisi sari sari.
On the direction of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna, the holder of Govardhan Hill, sits down. And then all the coward boys, along with Krishna's elder brother, Shri Baladev, sit down in rows to take their lunch. That's why we recommend sitting down in rows to take your prasad. And then someone comes around and serves out. That's the Vedic way. You can see even Krishna did that with all of his coward boys. The idea of going and... This is Western. But the Vedic way, sit down, and we should try to institute that. It's much better.
Shukta shakadi bhaji nalita kushmanda dalidalna dugda tumbi barimucha kanda.
They are then served the feast of shukta and various kinds of green leafy vegetables, then nice fried things and a salad made of the green leaves of the jute plant. They are also served pumpkin, baskets of fruit, small square cakes made of lentils and cooked down milk, then thick yogurt, squash cooked in milk, and vegetable preparations made from the flower of the banana tree. You don't want to go back to Godhead and be one of Krishna's coward boys? You don't want to be Krishna's friend?
Mugdabaram ashabaram rotika grutana shashkuli pushtaka kir puli payasana.
Then they receive fried squares of mung dal patties and ur dal patties, chapatis, and rice with ghee. Next, sweets made with milk, sugar, and sesame. Rice flour cakes, thick cooked down milk, cakes floating in milk, and sweet rice. This is just an ordinary lunch day with Krishna.
Karpura amrita keli ramma kirasara amrita rasala amla dvadasha prakara.
There is also sweet rice that tastes just like nectar due to its being mixed with camphor. There are bananas and cheese, which is nectarine and delicious. They also are served 12 kinds of sour preparations made with tamarinds, limes, lemons, oranges, and pomegranates. Not convinced yet? Luchichini sarapuri ladurasa bali bojana kodena krishna hoye kutahali. There are puris made with white flour and sugar. And this is not, by the way, processed sugar. This is transcendental sugar from, it drips out of the date trees and different things, sugar cane, made naturally. Okay. Krishna eagerly eats all of the food. Excuse me. I left something out. There are puris made with white flour and sugar, puris filled with cream, laddus, and dal patties boiled in sugared rice. Krishna eagerly eats all of the food.
Narikara pakkana virida vyanjana parama anande krishna korena bojana.
In great ecstasy and joy, Krishna eats the rice, curried vegetables, sweets, and pastries cooked by Srimati Radharani.
Chale bale ladukai shimadu mangala bagala bhajai aradeya hari bolo.
Krishna's funny Brahmin friend, Madhu Mangal, who is very fond of laddus, gets them by hook or by crook. Eating the laddus, he shouts, Haribol! Haribol! And makes a funny sound by slapping his sides under his armpits with his hands. Can you demonstrate that? No. You can't do it. All right. 10.
Radhikadi gane hari nayanera kone tripto hoye kaye krishna jashoda bhavane.
Beholding Radharani and her gopi friends out of the corners of his eyes, Krishna eats at the house of Mother Yashoda with great satisfaction. So Krishna is sitting down in rows with his cowherd friends, and the gopis, they're assisting Mother Yashoda, serving out, and they helped cook. Radharani cooked, and all the gopis, and Krishna's looking at the gopis, and the gopis are looking at him, and Krishna's eating with the... What a wonderful scene! You could be there! But you have to give up this attachment to this material world if you want to go there.
Bhajanante piye Krishna subhasita bari sabe mukta prakalai hoye sari sari.
After lunch, Krishna drinks rose-scented water. Then all of the boys standing in lines wash their mouths.
Hastamukha prakaliya jata saka gane anande bishrama kore baladeva sane.
After all the coward boys wash their hands and mouths, in great bliss they take rest with Lord Balaram. Haribo. Take rest after. The devotees in our movement used to really follow this quite a lot. Used to be almost a regulative principle that after prasadam, everyone would lie down on their left sides, because it's stated that, you know, if you lie on your left side, it aids digestion. So the devotees really like this principle. Especially at festivals. We used to have festivals. I remember in Berkeley, you know, the first Lord Chaitanya festival was held in Berkeley. 71, I think it was. And that little park, what is it called? People's Park? Yeah. So People's Park is where we had Lord Chaitanya, and we had a parade down Telegraph Avenue, and we went to People's Park. Jayananda Prabhu organized this festival. And after the feast, then you saw all the, you know, mostly the brahmacharis were all lying down, sleeping under the trees, imitating Lord Balaram. Okay. Next.
Jambula rasalane tambula masala tahakeye Krishna chandra suke nidra gela.
The two cowherd boys, Jambula and Rasala, then bring Krishna pan made with betel nuts, fancy spices, and katechu. After eating that pan, Sri Krishna Chandra then happily goes to sleep.
Bishalaka shikipuchi pucha chamara dulaya apurva shayaya Krishna suke nidra jaya.
There's even sleep in the spiritual world. Those of you who like sleep, you'll be happy to know that you can also sleep in the spiritual world with Balarama Krishna. While Krishna happily takes his rest on an excellent bedstead, his servant Vishalaksha cools him with a fan of peacock feathers.
Lalitadi, no. Jashomati agyapeye danishta anito Shri Krishna prasada radha punje hoye prito.
At Mother Yashoda's request, the gopi Danishta brings remnants of food left on Krishna's plate to Srimati Radharani, who eats them with great delight. So you see, there's a whole conspiracy. Yashoda is also in on it. She's making sure that Krishna's remnants goes to Radharani. It's described that Radharani's mother, Kirtida, and Yashoda are best of friends. So that explains why there's some transcendental activities going on here. Mother Yashoda is sending. And Mother Yashoda engages Radharani to cook for Krishna because she's the best cook. Krishna, Yashoda wants that Krishna gets the best prasadam, so therefore she engages Radharani. Radharani, you should cook for Krishna. And of course Radharani is very happy to do so.
Molitadi sakagana avesha paya mane mane suke radha krishna gunagaya.
Lalita Devi and the other gopis then receive the remnants. So they get the remnants from Radharani's plate. And within their hearts they sing the glories of Radharani and Krishna with great joy.
Hari lila ek matra chahara pramoda bhogarati gaye Thakur bhakti vinoda.
Thakur bhakti vinoda, whose one and only joy is the pastimes of Lord Hari, sings this bhoga arti song. So everything is there in the spiritual world. The mind is there, the intelligence, the ego, the identity, desires, feelings, emotions, sleep, dancing, eating, feasting, everything. Nothing's missing. The only thing that's missing is us. We're missing. Why are we here? What are we doing here? Moping around, lamenting for ourselves. Therefore, Krishna says in this verse, Manushochita Marasi. There's no need to lament because you're a spirit soul. You're part and parcel of Krishna. You're eternally the servant of Krishna. Why lament? Any other questions? Yes. Constitutional position is servant of Krishna. So in that position, if we know what our constitutional position is, then we have no more difficulties. There's nothing to lament about. It's because we've forgotten our constitutional position. So what needs to be done is simply we need to remember. And how to remember? Associate with those who remember. That's all we have to do. Really, there's nothing else required except stay in the association of devotees who have remembered their constitutional position and do what they do. And gradually, all of our problems will go away. There's another question over here. Yes? astrology benefit in liberating someone from the modes of material nature? In and of itself, that's not its purpose, to liberate you. Now, if you have your astrological chart and then you go to a spiritual master and say, how should I understand this? What does it mean? Then yes, it may be of some value. He may be able to look at it and say, okay, it says here that you're going to be very wealthy, so you should spend your money for Krishna. Okay? It says here that you're going to live to be 83. Okay, so you should engage all of your time in serving Krishna. But don't be so sure, because you may die at any moment. This is not a guarantee. Something may happen. If that's what it's supposed to be. See, that's another problem. Let's say in your astrological chart it says you're supposed to live to be 83. So then you may become complacent, thinking you won't die for 40, 50 years. But that's not necessarily the case. Otherwise, why do the scriptures tell us that we should be prepared to leave at any moment? There's no guarantee. Why then do the acharyas tell us that Parikshit Maharaj knew he had 7 days to live, but we're not sure we even have 7 minutes? So there's no guarantee. I couldn't hear the question. It's Vedic, because it has its basis in Vedas. Therefore, as our movement grows, then there will be, all the Vedic sciences will begin, will come out more. That's not a bad thing. Like we say, even though astrology is material, it has its basis in Vedic knowledge. Therefore, it has, when properly utilized, it's better than, for example, going to someone who has no idea, like these psychics who simply channel in something like that. At least if one, it's like in our society now, it's become quite common that before marriages are taken place, most responsible guardians, they say, well, let's have a chart then. So they check the charts and they see if they're done by a reputable astrologer. You can see whether there is compatibility, whether the qualities are similar. Because in a marriage, marriages are best amongst persons who are equal in their qualities. Someone who's primarily in the mode of goodness will not be happy with someone who's in the mode of ignorance. But if they're both in the mode of passion, they'll be happy. If they're both in ignorance, they'll be happy. And if they're both in goodness, they'll be happy. No, I agree with you. It cannot. But I'm answering your question now, and that is, why is it coming? And my observation is that, yes, as our movement grows and as we find the Vedic culture becoming more and more attractive, some persons who may not be on the pure devotional platform, they may become more interested in the sub branches of Vedic culture, the material aspects, than the pure bhakti, which is really what the essence is. But just like Varnashram, the system of Varnashram has different aspects. Pure Varnashram, Daiva Varnashram, can, yes, actually give one pure love of Godhead. But ordinary Varnashram does not. But it's still helpful because it gives one gradually elevation. So, of course, I agree with you that as far as our movement goes, our movement is meant to present pure bhakti, primarily. And I say primarily because we also may have a secondary responsibility to guide those, or to guide society in its gradual elevation towards pure bhakti. We as brahmanas, we taking that position, should be able to direct and guide the rest of society so they can set up varnashram, ordinary varnashram, and then gradually bring it into daiva varnashram. One has to have a spiritual master. This is important. Everyone, Prabhupada was saying this morning, we heard this, was it a discussion he was reading? Where was it? In Philadelphia? We were reading this morning from Lilamrita. Prabhupada was saying everyone in America should get initiated. And he wasn't joking. He was dead serious. That means everyone must have a spiritual master. Everyone must be guided by a bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, he will not know how to make spiritual advancement. So your question is a very good question. Without the bona fide spiritual master's guidance, we won't know how to use varnashram. We won't know how to use astrology. We'll get confused by everything. Even the Vedas will be completely confusing to us. Krishna describes the Vedas as being flowery words. He said, he tells Arjuna, rise above the flowery words of the Vedas. Why? Because Arjuna was ready to take up pure devotional service. But he didn't say that to everyone else. For those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance of the Vedas, the flowery words of the Vedas may be helpful. That's why they're there. So therefore, Krishna acted as spiritual master for Arjuna. We need a spiritual master too, to guide us through the labyrinth of Vedic knowledge even. It's described as being like a big banyan tree. And the Vedic hymns are also part of the tree. And they may bind us to the material world, but they can liberate also if we know how to, navigate through. The spiritual master is the captain. Karnadari Varnavam. He guides us through this labyrinth of different things, the Vedic hymns. There's tantras, and there's mantras, and there's samhitas, and there's all different kinds of Vedic evidence. But if we study all the Vedas, what will happen? Tarko pratishta shrutayo vibhinna. We'll just become confused. But by taking guidance from a bona fide spiritual master who's understood the essence of all the Vedas, he will guide us very easily as an expert captain guides our ship back to home, back to Godhead.